Hello everybody, welcome to our newest edition of our Deep Dive Cleantech Podcast. Today I have a very interesting guest. It's Paul von Sun, and just to give you a little introduction to him, I think we need to talk about the potential of renewable energy. I saw a statistic that 2% of the surface of the Sahara Desert is sufficient to supply our planet Earth with energy. And about 10 years ago, about 20 very well-known industrial companies have put together an industrial initiative, the so-called Desertec Industrial Initiative, and have promised to do around 500 billion euros of investments over the next 40 years up until 2050 to supply Europe with solar and wind energy from the desert. And Paul von Sun, he was the founding managing director of that Desertec Foundation. Welcome very much, Paul.
Ihr Lieben, hier ist nochmal Joel von Digital Compact und ich möchte euch noch einen kleinen Hinweis geben, denn unser Cleantech-Format wird unterstützt von VCO. Die kennt ihr vielleicht schon aus unseren anderen Podcast-Reihen und ich glaube, das könnte für viele von euch ein super spannender Arbeitgeber sein, denn VCO ist ja Teil der Familienunternehmensgruppe Fissmann, steht für Fissmann Taking Care Of, und das Berliner Unternehmen konzentriert sich auf die Themen Digitalisierung, Deep Tech, Prop Tech, New Business und Smart Living. Mit neuen Arbeitsmethoden wie zum Beispiel Design Thinking entwickelt VCO umfassende Lösungen und kümmert sich um die Bedürfnisse der Menschen in ihrem privaten und beruflichen Umfeld. Deshalb gründen sie eigene Unternehmen und investieren in Deep Tech und Prop Tech Startups, und das Team ist immer auf der Suche nach anderen großen Köpfen, um an der VCO-Reise teilzunehmen. Super energetisch, kann ich euch sagen. Ich war schon vor Ort. Hungrige Leute, die ganz kreativ arbeiten und wirklich innovativ unterwegs sind. Wenn du auch Teil dieser Familie werden willst, guck dir die Jobs mal an unter vco.io, schreibt sich v-co.io, oder ich verlinke das auch nochmal auf unserer Sponsorenseite und hier in den Shownotes unter dem Podcast.
Yeah, thank you, David. It's a pleasure to be here. And it's also a pleasure to talk about this initiative of the industry that started 10 years ago with a lot of national here in Germany, but also international attention. Well, ask me the questions and you get my answer.
Sure. Yeah, we do some Euro language, right? I mean, you're from Holland, you're a Dutch-born national, but you have worked a lot in Germany in the past as well. So let's maybe talk about yourself a few minutes before we dive into the topic here.
Yeah, that's right. I was born in Netherlands, in a city Leiden, and grew up in that region. Got most of my education there. I studied at the end of the day in Delft electrical engineering. And after military service, in military service, by the way, I was already at my first exposure to Germany in some of the field exercises in the Lüneburger Heide in those days. But after that period, I went to Siemens in Erlangen, where I developed actually the first applications for the computer in power system control.
Okay.
So to control power plants and the grid, electrical grids. So I did that about 5 years. Mm-hmm. And then I was hired by what is today TenneT in Germany.
Okay.
In those days in Holland was the Dutch grid operator, SEP, and later was renamed TenneT. And I did that. I was first a project leader for the new control center equipment, like computer equipment. And later I was the grid operator for the Dutch grid.
Okay, so you have an extensive experience in both Dutch and also German energy management. And today I think we can also mention that you are an energy manager with Innogy.
So after I went through a period through consultancy for an American consulting company, I was responsible for the European business. And then I was hired by the energy company Ascent in the Netherlands to set up energy trading, gas, electricity trading, and later renewables. So I would say about 19 years ago, 18 years ago, I became Mr. Green Power in Holland. We started the campaign for green power. It was an invention by that company to label electricity from renewable energy sources. So that's what I did. And after that, I became responsible for the German business. And after that, I went about 11 years ago to, I wanted to go more to a commercial or an entrepreneurial environment. I went to a company that went broke after 9 months. It was in the finance crisis. The company was called Econcern. Mm-hmm. And they were very active in solar, wind, biomass, and all that kind of thing.
But then in 2009, what were you thinking as a Dutch national already working in Germany for quite some time when you were asked to lead an initiative to promote energy from the desert? Did you take this idea seriously? Were you even maybe taking part of developing that plan? Maybe tell us a little bit more about this initial moment in 2009 when this crazy idea came together.
Actually, in 2009, there was just a time when the company where I was just entering, I was starting to have a job there, and the company went broke. I had no job. And then I heard from friends. Friends told me, both in Germany and in Holland, they said, hey, we have heard about this project. It was announced in the summer of 2009, and they look for a manager. My immediate reaction was, well, this is a German group of companies. Why should they
hire?
What
companies were involved back then?
It is like Munich Re and Siemens and Deutsche Bank and E.ON, RWE and so on. So the big German DAX companies. So I thought, why would they hire a Dutch guy? So,
and why did they?
Well, and then at that moment, they were not looking for a Dutch guy. They were looking for a German manager, actually for two. And then the question came up, why should we look in Germany for a manager? Why not more international? And although I think between Dutch and Germany, the differences are not that big. We are all Europeans, but still, they wanted to give this an international flavor. So I brought, so to say, this international aspect.
I mean, back then, I remember that. I think this was in 2009. There was this big newspaper article in the Süddeutsche, which is a leading German newspaper, announcing there will be a 400 billion euro investment of industrial companies. You named them already, Munich Re, Siemens, Deutsche Bank, all very well-known companies. Big, big, huge investment to produce solar energy in the desert under the assumption that producing solar energy there is cheaper than here in Europe. We talk about this a little later. This was an amazing, let's say, communicative start. So I would assume the expectations were very, very high. And I think a lot of our listeners will still remember that. Back in the days, we had so many newspapers, not just in Germany, across Europe, across the world, actually writing about it. So the expectations were very high, right?
Yes, definitely. Actually, today we are 2019. If you think about 10 years ago, 2009, that was just a moment after the financial crisis.
That's right.
And there was an atmosphere of depression, and a lot of people didn't know where to go, and all the industries had really troubles to see perspectives in their business, many of the industry. And then this idea came up. This idea was not really new, this idea was on energy from deserts, and that was connected actually to this time of looking for new perspectives, so like optimistic thoughts about the future. And the industry really took this up, and then they based, actually the idea was based on studies of the Deutsche Luft- und Raumfahrt Institute, so DLR.
The German
Aerospace Institute. They made a lot of studies about what's the added value of solar, mainly solar, but also wind, but in any case, solar energy, to replace actually nuclear plants and later on also fossil plants. In first, they thought about Germany, and later on, this was enlarged to Europe. In any case, this was a moment where everyone thought, well, hey, this is really big thing for us that will deliver a lot of projects and so on. And then this figure of 400 billion euros, you mentioned this was came out only of one of the studies. It was so to say a sort of scenario number.
Okay.
If you would say like in 40 years, in those days it was 2009, 2010, in 40 years we are in 2050, what can we do in these 40 years? The idea was to bring until about 15% of the consumption that we need in Europe, to bring it from the deserts. And that in those scenarios, or one of these scenarios that produced then this 400 billion euro number, to the public, the broad public and the press, this was an outrageous large number. But if you consider in the energy supply in Europe, in each country, over a time frame of 40 years, 400 billion euros is a normal figure. It's like 10 billion per year. That is what industries is investing in energy supply in a normal country.
Ihr Lieben, heute mal ein ganz feines Stück Technologie als Werbepartner. Und zwar, wenn ihr öfters geschäftlich reist, bietet sich euch jetzt die Chance, ganz viel Geld, Nerven und vor allem auch Zeit zu sparen. Wovon rede ich? Von unserem Partner Comtravo. Comtravo ist eine intelligente Geschäftsreiselösung, mit der ihr Folgendes tun könnt. Mit nur einer Textnachricht, beispielsweise per E-Mail, könnt ihr eine komplette Reise sekundenschnell buchen. Denn Comtravo Software übersetzt diese Anfrage durch Natural Language Processing in strukturierte Daten und liefert dann mit Hilfe von Machine Learning Ansätzen die besten individuell zugeschnittenen Optionen. Das heißt, als Kunde könnt ihr eure favorisierten Reisebausteine mit nur einem Klick buchen und greift auf eine innovative Technologie zurück, die schnell und trotzdem individuell arbeitet. Das heißt, ihr habt so ein Stück weit den Service eines persönlichen Reisebüros und trotzdem die Effizienz eines Online-Tools. Total smart, das Ganze lässt sich auch auf Anforderungen, die man im Betrieb hat, ausrichten. Das heißt, wenn ihr bestimmte Reisevorgaben habt, so ein Richtlinienmanagement, könnt ihr das damit matchen, also es wird beachtet und ihr kommt auch in den Genuss günstigerer Tarife. Teilweise spart ihr bis zu 30%, weil Comtravo einfach gute Sätze aushandelt. Finde ich total spannend, es spart wirklich viel Zeit, es ist extrem angenehm zu bedienen. Wenn ihr euch das auch mal anschauen wollt, dann geht doch einfach auf comtravo.com. Probiert es mal aus und bucht eure nächste Reise mit Hilfe einer Computermaschine, die wie ein Reisebüro für euch arbeitet. Wenn euch das zu schnell ging, findet ihr das Ganze wie immer auch in unseren Shownotes und auf digitalkompakt.de/sponsoren. Da steht alles noch einmal zusammengefasst.
But from a communication point of view, it was very well framed, right? Because back then you were talking about a 400 billion investment. This really sounded like somebody's going to do investments, jobs are going to be created, products are going to be shipped, etc., etc. At the same time, I remember we had a big discussion in Germany around how expensive solar energy actually is. And so everybody talked here in Germany about the costs and whether it's really worth it to do all of that. And the cost, all the figures which were discussed, were a lot lower than the 400 billion. So you framed it as an investment, so more as an opportunity, while we had a discussion here about costs. And I think this was so interesting back then and really created a lot of, let's say, movements and spirit as well in the industry that maybe solar energy and wind energy could eventually replace fossil and nuclear energy.
And now you come to the point, I think, where you can look from very different face angles to what really happens. Well, first of all, to put a scenario number from the laboratory of studies from DLR as a sort of guideline for investments without any more detailed investigation about acceptance and about what happens in your local market and about how to bring the energy from A to B and so on and so forth. That is, of course, well, very imperfect. So it was a starting point, like a vague idea, but this could happen, it could be a cost like this, but if you talk about 40 years, these numbers, actually, this doesn't say anything to industrial players. But it is, on the other hand, it's magic to the public. So it was a sort of moment of, well, this will be a great solution, the industry is going to do this for us. But at that moment, in 2009, the industry could not make any commitment yet because there were no business cases, there were no detailed plans. And the most important of all of this, that the countries we are talking about, the North African and Middle East countries, they were not yet involved at all. They were not aware of this. So this idea came from the media and from some of the companies that were involved to the world. And everyone was puzzling, like, well, hey, what's going to happen here? And that was the context in which they, at the end of the day, they asked me to run this business, to run this team, and to start sorting out what are we really going to do.
That's why I know they wanted to have a Dutch person to do this, right? Because this idea came out of Munich. All of a sudden, it made the news in the Arab world. They didn't know anything about their luck being a deliverer of solar energy to Europe. And now they got you, actually, to do good diplomatic negotiations here. So how were your reactions when you traveled in these countries, explaining them that you are actually planning to produce solar and some wind energy and ship this to Europe through big, big cables? What were the reactions? And I think we need to know this was before the Arab Spring.
Yes, this was before the Arab Spring. And that is also, well, the very first thing before I went to talk to anyone, I tried to find out what is really the idea of this desert tech. Can someone explain me what this desert tech concept is? Because people were talking about a concept.
Explain it to us.
And then, actually, to be honest, I found out that there was not really a concept. The only thing that we had were studies, study material from the DLR. That were great studies, but this is typical from a study environment. In which you have assumptions, free assumptions from free access research and all that kind of thing, which is all great, but you have to test it first with the stakeholders and also with face angles to look like these assumptions, can they really hold? And actually from the very first moment, I didn't find it so clear at the moment, at the beginning, that should be first energy from North Africa to Europe. One of the questions is this production of solar energy, will that find its way in the local markets? I come from a market perspective. I was used to trading and all that kind of things. So these were the first questions. And then we said, in one of the first months after I started, I want to go to the countries, I went to Tunisia, to Morocco, and Algeria. And what I found out is that the first reactions from these countries were very different. Moroccans, they were already ahead of this, and they understood that the deserts could deliver a lot of energy, especially solar energy, but also wind. And under the king, by the way, they had programmed to develop this. And they thought, well, hey, this is interesting. The Germans, they want to support this. And they thought, well, they can also pay for this. Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. This was a very good click. Mm-hmm. So we had I remember the first meeting with the Moroccans was very friendly because more or less they expected some money. Mm-hmm. And then they would definitely be pleased to work on this and to deliver electricity if that would be necessary. In Syria, it was completely the opposite. First of all, it was very difficult to get a meeting at all in that country.
And you had meetings with at minister level or at the...
Then there was in those days a minister, an oral minister, Khalil, mm-hmm. and he already has openly said in the press, this is a bloody shame what's going on. the Germans want to build solar plants in our country and then bring the electricity to Europe. That's just the way how these people perceive this.
Perceived like colonialism, right?
It is a pure neo-colonialism. So I went there to Algeria. I did not get hold of the minister. He did not like to talk to me. But we had a meeting with people around him. And then the first question they asked me is, Mr. Van Zon, why do you think that we need you? That's what they said. And there was a little bit aggressive undertone. So my response was, I said, no, I don't think that you need us or that we have to do something in your country. I come here to talk to you to hear if we can set up some kind of cooperation about something in our mutual benefit. So that was the first moment in which we already discovered that we are at a very, very rudimentary stage and that we had to do a lot of homework, so to say, to find out like these plans or ideas that were developed in Germany, what is the added value, the benefit to the countries where it really happens? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then this was also the starting point of a very long process in which there were very many discussions and turbulences and conflicts and all that, in which then ultimately there where we are today, that we found a real solution that is beneficial for all parties involved.
But back then, the idea was of this founding companies, and you mentioned a few of them, like Deutsche Bank, Munich Re, ABB as the cable producer, energy companies like E.ON. But then later on, you expanded this consortium to a more international platform.
First, the starting point was, as you said, the 12 companies. There were 10 German companies, and a Spanish company, Amegoa, mm-hmm. and an Algerian company, Cevital. Mm-hmm. That was the starting point. And yeah, well, we very soon found out 2 points. First of all, there were a lot of other companies, not only in Germany, but in Europe and even worldwide, that wanted to join this group. Mm-hmm. Because at the very beginning, this looks like very sexy and it is a high profile and they wanted to be there. Mm-hmm. Although nobody knew exactly where would it go, but they just wanted to step into. And then we invented a sort of second group of so-called associated partners. Because you can imagine that if you start with shareholders of a GmbH, it's a legal entity of 12, yeah, they are careful to look like who are we taking on board as a shareholder with decision power and all that kind of thing. So we created the opportunity for companies to join the group as an associated partner just to help out, to get all the information and to be a member of this group. And also we said we should not restrict this to German companies. We should also get rid of the idea that this is a German thing for Germany. We said it should be a movement, international movement, for the benefit of the countries in the deserts, but also for the benefit of the international industry.
So you had Saudi Arabia, the Middle East, North America, even State China Grid, I think,
joined later. And then later on, that came really a couple of years later, the Chinese. And that is a very interesting point, because at some point in time, I was in Berlin and met the chairman of State Grid Corporation of China, which is the largest energy company on Earth with 1.9 million labor, which is really a big number.
They have more labor than some utilities here in Germany have as customers, right?
Yeah, definitely. And he told me, and I showed this also in a conference, that they were working on ideas to connect all the continents through grids, electrical grids. And that looked very much on one aspect of this DESERTEC, of this DIR, was also to connect North Africa with Europe and West Asia with North Africa and Europe. And he was thus very, very interested in cooperation with us. And they then also, after some years, joined the shareholder group of DIR.
At the end of the day, you turned it from a German initiative to a very international initiative. You started in 2009 with this very big promise. But then all of a sudden, in 2011, we had the beginning of the so-called Arab Spring. Actually, it started already in December 2010, when a young Tunisian market worker burnt himself because of rising prices and corruption in the country. Did you, in that moment when that happened, immediately grasp what kind of consequences this would have as well for the DESERTEC industrial initiative?
For us, for our work, it has not had not direct consequence. It had an indirect consequence because our stakeholders got nervous. Because there was a lot of talk like, oh, what's going on? And because you should always keep in mind that many of our stakeholders had the idea really that we would simply build power plants in the deserts, the big solar thermal power plants, connect them to cables and bring the electricity to Europe. But already in 2011, when it happened, we knew already that it's not the way this development will take place. The way that these developments will take place will most likely be that the local countries, like Morocco did, and Algeria and Tunisia and all these countries, they will, together with DIR, together with our movement, develop renewable energy, and not only solar thermal, but also photovoltaic and also wind turbines, and also extension of their grids, and also connection not only with Europe, but also between the countries. This kind of idea, this very narrow-minded idea, so to say, big power plant, a cable to Europe and or even to Germany, was already more or less abundant in those days.
So this really changed. In the beginning, that was the idea, right? To connect Northern Africa to Europe and to ship electricity to Europe. When did this shift and how did you change the focus of the DESERTEC initiative?
First of all, it's also important to underline that we have actually two streams of main streams of work. One mainstream was less visible to the public. Real studies for the type of investments that we could expect until 2050. So what we did is, together with Fraunhofer Gesellschaft and with other institutions, we did real system studies to set up different scenarios of connecting the grid of Europe with North Africa and Middle East, and also to find out what are the benefits. You can save a lot of cost, that kind of thing. But these are studies that take place invisibly to the public. They don't see them. The other stream was more pressure, and that was completely visible, and it was almost daily commented in the press. It was two or three example power stations in, for instance, Morocco or Tunisia, that was very much focused on solar thermal, and they should be very large. And then there was also an idea at the very beginning to connect these power stations with separate cables to Europe even. First of all, we said together with our shareholders, our role should not be to develop these power stations, which was at the very beginning would be a theoretical option, but only to show what kind of power stations could become feasible. So to think about a sort of reverence or an example of an ideal case that could be taken up by the industry for investment. So, and when we were studying this under heavy pressure and daily commenting in the newspapers, we already found out that these power stations, they should feed their electricity into the local grid. Mm-hmm. And then the next question is, from there, would then this electricity being part of the local grid already partly also be exported to, for instance, Spain or to France or to Italy? And then the years thereafter, what happened is in Europe, even when in Germany nuclear power plants were phased out, there still was a heavy overcapacity. There was, so to say, too much electricity. Mm-hmm. Also the big increase of solar and wind and hydro and lower demands. Mm-hmm. So there was more than enough electricity capacity, electricity potential in Europe. At the same time, there is a lack, structural lack of electricity in North Africa. So instead of thinking of bringing electricity from North Africa to Europe, what we saw that Europe is exporting to North Africa. Mm-hmm. So then this created a lot of confusion and also conflicts and irritation, because for many parties, it was difficult to rethink this, to accept the fact that an initial idea that electricity should simply go from North Africa to Europe for quite some years would not make sense.
Yeah? Right. But the initial motivation was probably as well purely to sell products, right? To sell a solar thermal plant, to sell engineering services, etc., etc. So you could argue they would still have an upside because they would sell something in Northern Africa. And as you said, and there's one more element. In Europe, solar and wind prices really came down. So you had prices of 10 cents per kilowatt hour and even lower. And today it's already around 5 cents per kilowatt hour and lower, which is cheaper than producing solar energy in the desert, plus all the infrastructure costs connecting Northern Africa to Europe. And I think this probably was one of the other reasons as well to see, well, this is actually more economically if we just produce our renewable energy mainly here in Europe and then have those plants in Northern Africa serve the local markets, because you have an increase of population, you have a very young population there, you don't have overcapacity, you actually have a demand for electricity.
Yeah, but I think what you say is what I heard a lot, the kind of thinking that people always tend to think a power station in, for instance, Morocco or Algeria could be able to bring its own power to Europe. But that's normally not the way it works, because each power station, coal, there are coal plants, by the way, or gas, or oil even, or wind, solar PV, solar CSP, is per definition bringing its electricity to the local market, first of all. And then if you want to import from this local market, like from Morocco, if you say, well, we want electricity from Morocco, then you buy this power from the Morocco market, so-called, you tap from this mix. And then the question is, when are you going to tap from this mix? And you only do this if the cost of that mix is lower than in your own system. And like I said, in those days and until today, we are 2019, still today, the cost mix, so to say, in Morocco or in Algeria is higher than in Spain. So Spain, and that's exactly what we see today, Spain is exporting its maximum capacity, more or less, to Morocco every day.
The other way around.
Yeah, so it's the other way around. And that's an interesting phenomenon, because the international community and the industry and also the governments and the European Commission and the grid operators, they had no real interest to extend the capacity, the connection to Morocco, for instance, or Tunisia, for exporting from Europe to North Africa. That is completely against the thinking that we all had at the beginning, that the electricity should come from there. That was created, of course, a lot of confusion, first of all, also discomfort at many players, and also conflicts. Mm-hmm. But that took a few years, and then we came to a point, I think it was in 2013, where we said, well, listen, the whole idea of this Desertec is to reduce emissions, also maybe cost, and to ensure security of supply. But the main reason is reducing emissions. And by reducing emissions means that everywhere in Germany, in Holland, in France, in Italy, in Spain, and in North Africa, we should stimulate encourage renewable energy as much as we can. And so start doing this in North Africa and then take care that this energy will be taken by the consumers, by the demand that's locally.
So now looking back 10 years, and everybody should know as well that Paul van Zoon has just published together with a co-author Thomas Isenburg, a book about his experiences building up the Desertec initiative, doing business in the Arab region. This book is called Energy Transition in the Desert. An English version will come out pretty soon as well.
Ihr Lieben, falls ihr auf der Suche nach einer PR-Agentur seid, dann hat eure Suche jetzt womöglich ein Ende gefunden, denn ich habe mir überlegt, weil ich so oft gefragt werde, ob ich gute PR-Agenturen kenne, dass ich das mal systematisieren sollte. Deshalb habe ich unter digitalkompakt.de/PR, ganz einfach zu merken, digitalkompakt.de/PR, eine kleine Abfrage gebaut. Da müsst ihr einfach nur eintragen, was ihr für Kommunikationsziele habt, was ihr für ein Unternehmen eigentlich seid, worauf es euch ankommt etc. pp. Also alles Sachen, die ihr aus dem Ärmel schüttelt. Und dann gucke ich mal, ob ich eine gute PR-Agentur kenne, die zu euch passen könnte. Ich habe über die Jahre mich viele kennengelernt, weil die arbeiten ja quasi mit mir zusammen, wollen mir Informationen verkaufen, in Anführungsstrichen. Und auf dem Wege habe ich mir ein paar rausgesucht, von denen ich glaube, dass man sie guten Gewissens empfehlen kann, weil sie gute Arbeit machen. Das heißt, wenn du auch eine suchst, geh einfach mal auf diese Seite, digitalkompakt.de/PR, tipp ein, was du brauchst. Wenn ich eine gute kenne, stelle ich sie dir per E-Mail vor. Wenn nicht, auch nicht schlimm, dann gebe ich dir kurz Bescheid und es kostet dich gar nichts. Also ich will kein Geld dafür haben, dass ich dir dann Kontakt anbahne, sondern es ist einfach nur ein Service von uns. In diesem Sinne, wenn du auf der Suche bist, digitalkompakt.de/PR.
So, after all these 10 years, what can you say, what did you actually achieve?
I think what we really achieved is that we have given an impulse. We had to learn that if you talk about a big change in or a paradigm change in energy supply, this is not something you can plan on the minute. You cannot say exactly for the next 40 years how this will go. So it is more a learning process. It is a searching for solutions with the objective of lower emissions. So this gave us a lot of learnings in practice. And what we achieved is that all these countries today, there is no country in North Africa, Middle East, and also not in Europe, that has not big programs for the energy transition, for energy efficiency, for renewable energy, and also more system approach, like how this fit into the grid and how can we connect. So the big impulse has been given by DII, and now you see that each country and also international institutions, they are taking this. 10 years ago, there were almost no institutions, governments, and so on really dealing with this renewable energy. Today, they all are doing this. Actually, they are doing the job that DII was supposed to do.
So you created this impulse, you sort of gave the world a narrative, a story which inspired, and not just companies doing investments, but also these countries. But they're different countries, right? I mean, I think you probably cannot compare Morocco, which is probably rather resource, let's say, poor in terms of energy or conventional energy sources. But if you look into Saudi Arabia, or I just recently have been in Oman, where they have quite some oil resources still, but they are also changing over to solar. Why are they doing this?
First of all, the countries like Morocco, you mentioned this, and Tunisia and Jordan, by the way, they have no oil. There are no oil or gas, very little amounts. So they have always felt the vulnerability because they have to import oil or gas or even coal. So to all these countries that normally need to import their energy, they all are switching as fast as they can to renewables. It's very clear. The countries like Saudi Arabia, Algeria, partly Oman and Kuwait and the Emirates, that are the traditional exporters of energy, of oil or gas, they had not this pressure. But also these countries, they start understanding, first of all, that all the gas or oil that they burn in their own country, they could replace this with solar and then export more of the oil and gas, so to say.
So they better use the cheap solar at home and sell the remaining petroleum for higher costs and prices.
So they started understanding this, and now today it's even simpler because in Saudi Arabia, for instance, with 2 cents per kilowatt hour for both wind and solar, and there are now projects of 300 and 400 megawatts going on. this is a no-brainer that wherever they can develop such kinds of projects, they will simply do it. And now the capital streams are going in the direction, not only state capital of the government of Saudi Arabia, but also international private money is flowing into these countries.
And you see that, as we both already mentioned, that solar, wind and other renewable energies really became competitive across the globe, meaning as well that the demand for oil is just becoming less. And the less demand you have, the less investment these countries have to do into or to use for oil exploration as well. So the oil prices is actually not going up a lot, but it's really going down because the demand is going back.
Yeah, if you look at figures of the IEA, the International Energy Agency, there is not yet there. They claim that there is not yet this peak demand of oil. So the oil demand is not yet declining, but there will be a moment in the coming years that this peak will be reached and it will decline. So there is still a lot of demand for oil and gas, and I think that even the gas market is growing. But the total energy market is growing anyway. And we will definitely see, especially in the power supply of the electricity sector, a shift to renewables is the easiest part. In transport, that will be a little bit delayed. And also in chemical industry and all that, they will shift maybe later on.
So, liebe Hörer, für heute sind wir schon wieder am Ende unseres Podcasts angelangt. Wenn euch das Thema aber noch weiter interessiert, habt ihr die Möglichkeit, euch auf Patreon extra lange Podcasts von uns zu besorgen. Also quasi jeweils einen Director's Cut, der noch einmal 10-20% länger ist und dementsprechend mehr Inhalt bietet. Patreon schreibt sich wieder Patron, nur mit E dazwischen, also Patreon. Und unter patreon.com/dekompakt könnt ihr euch für monatlich ein paar Taler besagte extra lange Podcasts klicken. Dort ist dann übrigens auch keine Werbung enthalten, sondern diese wird ans Ende geschnitten und auch sonst kommt ihr in den Genuss unterschiedlicher Extra-Inhalte wie unser Recherchematerial, die Teilnahme an all unseren Gewinnspielen und. Uns freut es natürlich sehr, wenn wir euch für diese Bonusinhalte begeistern können. Ansonsten vielen Dank fürs Zuhören und auf bald!